everybody.
Open the district to our visitors, our parliamentary teams, our support staff, our parliamentary legal team in particular. We're going to need them in this meeting. Honourable members, let me on the onset say that in terms of our programme, we have allocated from 9 until 5 for this meeting. My reading of what we have before us leads me to indicate that we may end at after 12, the normal time. We may not spend the entire day. Martin, did you arrange lunch for us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, honourable members, so just because there's lunch, I'll delay the proceedings a little bit. We'll talk slower. Honourable,
I would not partake in that.
Right, just take it slow. That is a beautiful song. Take it slow, take it slow, take it slow. We are this morning led by the Z list, which indicates that we have to deal with the following bills. I thought we'd start with this one, which was the Foreign Service Amendment Bill. But I spoke to the DG yesterday, he's going to join us. I see in his team is not here. So we'll start then with something else. But the other bills before us is the Gambling Amendment, National Gambling Amendment Bill. We also have the Copyright Amendment Bill, as well as the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. I see we have a strong delegation from the DTI, which we always have, Dr. Masoja and their team, the administrator from the National Gambling Board, and also the CEO of the CIPC, his support staff. We welcome you all. I acknowledge our legal advisors at the back, both in DTI and in Parliament. And we can start. Our agenda is going to be to look at the bills, and then do we have the minutes of the last meeting? Okay, then we have the minutes of our last meeting. Those are the only items that we'll deal with on the agenda. Honourable members, with your permission, we're going to look at each one of the bills separately, and we may adopt a different methodology in terms of how we deal with the various bills. Let's start then with the National Gambling Amendment Bill. For the record, we have had, this is Section 76, we have had it referred to us by the National Assembly, where they had a number of submissions. We have had our own public hearings in the provinces convened by our provincial legislatures. We have received initial mandates from the provincial legislatures last week. We looked at the submissions from the provinces. We have submitted to you two documents in that regard. The one is the document from the DTI indicating what has been the summary of the submissions from the provinces. And then we also have from our parliament team, these people don't put their name on, so I don't know whether it's the content advisor or the research. Now, we don't have a content advisor, so I assure Hanif is the research team that has given us a document as well, summarizing that. Now, I know these documents are very difficult to read on your iPad. You need to read them on your laptop. However, those have been circulated. Personally, I don't think that we're going to need those documents here today. All right? It's the summaries. We are, as the National Council of Provinces, led in Section 76 legislation by the mandates that we receive from our provincial legislatures. Now, Honorable Dikgale, yesterday I wasn't chairing, so I let you go with that. But we're saying two things about what we get from the provincial legislatures. The portfolio committee in the province writes to the speaker, and the mandates that we get, in most instances, would come from the speaker. So the Honorable Dikgale is right. We get it from the portfolio committee. They have done the work. But very often what the process is, they take it to the speaker, and the speaker brings it to the House, and then we get the mandate from the House. However, it hasn't in our last 25 years of democracy been any instance where when a portfolio committee takes something to the House will reject that. It may happen. We have a very vibrant democracy, but it has not so. What we have here are the mandates that comes. If I look at them, I think all of them are from the speakers. We have the following mandates, honorable members. Three provinces on the National Gambling Bill has voted in favor of the National Gambling Amendment Bill. That's Limpopo Province, Mpumalanga Province, and the Northern Cape. The poor provinces has voted in favor because they benefit particularly from the National Lotteries Commission. Then we have Eastern Cape. We spent lots of time on theirs and Gauteng's yesterday. Both Eastern Cape and Gauteng has voted against. Last week, I said yesterday, it was not yesterday that we spent the time, last week Wednesday, sorry. Last week, we also had the mandate from KZN, where KZN was abstaining. This week, we have a mandate from KZN, where KZN is clearly not supporting. And then we have the mandate from Western Cape, not supporting. So what we have before us is three provinces, four provinces not supporting, and two mandates we have not received.
Wow.
That is the mandate from Free State. Free State did communicate with us. They said they'll be sitting on Friday. Yeah, and they'll give us a mandate after Friday.
Yeah, they won't give us one in front of us before they even add it in the legislature.
Which is the other province? Just help me with the last province.
Northwest.
From Northwest, Lupeka, what's the information? Feedback. No feedback from Northwest. And the Honorable Ntebe is not here to help us. But we have seven mandates. That means that in terms of our rule, we can proceed. Honorable members, the procedure is very straightforward. The provinces have voted against it. So what it essentially means is that we must write our report to the NCOP indicating that the provinces, for the majority of provinces, have not supported it. Right? I will, with your permission, then prepare such a report and submit it to the sitting next week. Supeka and his team as secretariat has prepared a report for me. It is a report that gives us a breakdown of the proposals for amendments and the reasons for accepting or not accepting proposals related thereto. The report is not numbered, but I think it's something like 8 pages. Now, honorable members, I am using my discretion. I'm not presenting this report to the NCOP because it makes no sense. If the administration was not changing, then it was going to be necessary. But in terms of the rules of Parliament, what is not passed during this fifth administration must start from scratch in the sixth administration. So it makes no sense to give this breakdown to the House. We will, however, for record purposes, leave this with the secretaries of the committee, and should the next portfolio committee on trade and industry in the sixth administration or the select committee dealing with this bill in the NCOP wants the record, then this will be available to them. But I won't read it in the House. In the House, I will merely indicate what has been the factual report backs that we received from our provincial legislatures on the matter. Honorable Dihale, are you okay with that?
You know, Chairperson, my worry is I know the two provinces that did not respond in time. Obviously, because they are the poor provinces, are going to support the three that are here. So my question is, what if we finish now and the other province submit? But I'm happy that you are saying we are going to withdraw it and forward the responsibility to the sixth parliament.
Let me just indicate, Honorable Dihale, you know the rules. The rules are that what happens is the select committee meets. The select committee looks at the mandates before us. And we can only make a decision on the mandates that are before us. If a mandate is submitted after the meeting of the select committee or after the select committee has voted on that matter, then... Now, on this one, we don't vote. We merely note, right? So we're sitting now. We work on what we have before us. And what we have before us means that we'll essentially have to... I must still consult with our legal advisors. Do we withdraw? Or because I like it that you used the word. You see, we can't withdraw what we've sent to the provinces, right? So the provinces has not given us a mandate. So the thing basically falls through because of the administrative changes that we're having as well. But I'm glad that you're raising that particular point. What happens when those mandates come late? Should the mandates come late, what I will have to do as your chairperson is just to report to the House that these mandates came, but they were late, and therefore they cannot be considered. Okay, if we were sitting, I was saying it would have been a greater dilemma for me as chairperson. I was just saying to Dr. Masocha, if I was sitting with four and four, because I don't know what the rules say. Can the chairperson vote, use a casting vote in such a vote? In such a situation. I don't know. I'm from Gauteng. I can't vote against my province.
Can we go on, please?
Sorry,
the honorable member is upsetting the meeting. You're not giving her permission to talk.
And who gave you the permission? Did you raise your hand and allow the chairperson to give him
a No, you see, the laugh between the two of you. He's upset because you're not sitting close to him this morning. Okay, honorable members. So, I will give the report in summary. The report is that we're referring this back to the National Assembly, and the process has got to start from the beginning. Okay, I'll seek legal advice with your permission then. If the legal advice is that I should just report to the House that we rather withdraw, I will do that. Okay? You happy with both? Okay. Thank you. Then we've dealt with the National Gambling Amendment Bill. Let me just use this time to also then thank Dr. Masoja and her team for the cooperation that they've provided to this committee. We know that we
that's
have
all
put
the
them under
there.
Pressure
mm-hmm. that's all
to
the
do the work within short spaces of time. But I think we have done very well. I'm saying it's not the pressure. We can deal with pressure. It's not the pressure that has caused what we hear now. It's the democratic process. We respect the democratic process. Okay, that done. Let's go to the next one, which is an easier one. Now we'll have to get the documentation for that one again. We'll deal firstly with the easier one. Let's deal with the Performance Protection Amendment. After that, we'll deal with the copyright. Honourable members, while the documents are being distributed to us, that is Section 75 legislation. The submissions have been made to us. The reading that I have of the House is that we are largely in agreement with Performance Protection Amendment Bill. We deem it appropriate that we, as members of Parliament, take very seriously the needs of the artists and the performers within those sectors, and it is important that we provide them with better protection by amending that particular piece of legislation. The documents are being distributed to you now. I have not received it yet. It just started. Martin is discriminating against me. Okay. We have the document, honourable members, which is the response from no, we only have the legislation paper. Dr. Masoja, you have given us your response on that, right? So we have it in a soft copy. No, that's the
coloring. We just have the bill such as
keep that one, sir. That's right.
We were responding the last time to the submission. So today we're going to get a cue from yourself in terms of the approach with the bill.
Okay, honourable members. Dr. Masoja has just been very helpful to me to say that what happened, we received the submissions, very limited, on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. We discussed it during our meeting last week, whatever we've received, and the responses from Durko thereupon. There is a little bit of an overlap between the performance protection and the copyright. We have the document before us that comes from our research team. Yeah. And that is 141 pages. Oh, this is from the department, sorry. I just saw the emblem there. Okay, we have the document from the department, 141 pages. Right. Honourable members, because it's being 75, and because I believe in the democratic space, I will allow you to then guide me what are your final say on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, the Honourable Chai. Any other hands? Honourable High while the other members consider.
Okay. I just want to first find out from the department, the DCI. You see, we have this document, as well as there was a presentation in terms of the responses of the department. I wanted to check if this document, which is fine in terms of the size compared to this one, whether this one summarizes this one, or we still need to go through this one. But secondly, Chair, I was going to suggest then if we are to use this one, rather that we ask the doctor to take two on those areas that have amendments, not necessarily the general concerns that are raised by the stakeholders, but those areas that require, they suggesting amendments on, and then check with the members whether they agree with the proposed amendments by the stakeholders or they agree with the responses by the department. So I wanted to suggest that perhaps that should be the approach, but the first one is the clarity on the two documents.
Mm-hmm. So, can I just check with you whether you agree with me? Last week, we looked at the submissions that we've received, and then the DTI had received it as well. So in the summary document that you're referring to, the DTI has attempted to address that matter. If there were proposed amendments, the DTI has indicated to us why those amendments will be considered, and the primary response thereto was that it is already in there. So that summary document that you're referring to there is something that we have dealt with last week. Now, I'm saying this subject to your understanding thereof. My understanding thereof, Honorable High, was that we have dealt with that summary document last week in a presentation by DTI. Should you want DTI to refresh us, I would not have a problem with that. But I think the answer to your question is whether that is a summary of this, yes. Because what has happened here is that you have the two bills collapsed into one. Am I right? Right. But last week, when we did the presentation, we did separately. The bigger document was the copyright amendment, and the thinner document was the protection of performers. You have the floor, sir.
Okay, you've clarified the first part. Then the second part, if you remember last week when Honorable Faba just wanted us to reject the bill before we even engage it. Then, because you are talking about the experts and everybody else, you know, and then I said in the meeting, we should not allow that this bill should be rejected before we even engage it. And I suggested that perhaps what we needed to do was to look at the proposals, proposed amendments, as well as the response of the department, and then decide which one we agree with. And then you said, no, we'll do that this week. So I thought, therefore, that this is what we're going to be doing. That's why I was going to perhaps suggest then, perhaps if you just take us through what are the proposed amendments, what is the response of a department, and check with members whether which one they agree with. Is it the proposed amendment or the response of a department, and then we move to the following one until we've done it, all of them.
Okay, Dr. Masacha, I'll give you a chance to respond on that now. Prepare yourself for that. Let's have the Honourable Father first.
Thank you, Chairperson. I highly reject the statement made made by our colleague here, as I didn't say at one time that we have to reject this bill before we start it. I think this is trying to go to voters or something. I don't know if this is a live broadcast. That's maybe he's trying to get more votes. But Chairperson, the reality is that there was a subject matter expert and a panel that was of a panel of subject matter experts. I clearly state that we are not experts on that area. And if we're not experts, we cannot, even the legal team had interactions between each other that it was maybe or maybe not. And I was saying, if we look at this expert, this panel of experts was put in place because we don't have this info and because we're not experts on it. And that was my problem, why I rejected it. Because we cannot, I said, if we don't look at the expert's view and consider that, how can we then go on with it if the experts are even against it? This panel of experts was put into place to look if this bill is in all its aspects in order. And it wasn't. So Chairperson, because it wasn't in order with it, this is why I said on that basis we must reject it, because it was a panel of experts.
I'll come back to you now, Honourable Barber, but let's have the Honourable Ter Blanche first, then I'll come back to you on the question of the experts.
Chairperson, thank you. I think you will recall, and I mean that's on record, I made quite a statement last week, and I just want to say again that is still my stance. I'm not going to repeat that again because that is unnecessary piece on record. So I also made a statement, and saying why, as to why I think, I don't support it, and why I think that, we'll have to, maybe send it even back to the NA. That is what I said, and that the statement is there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Blanche, thank you very much. There is no problem with you repeating that today for the record as well. But, Honourable Members, I have an email here dated on the 8th of March 2019 from Mr. Tobias Convetter. And the heading is Misinterpretation of my copyright bill comments. And he says, while I was unable to attend the NCOB deliberations earlier this week regarding the Copyright Amendment Bill, I looked at the reports and I also spoke to some of the participants, and I wish to congratulate you on what appears to be a robust yet streamlined discussion that was able to separate facts from myths. It has, however, come to my attention that my recent submission has been misinterpreted as rejecting the introduction of fair use. The opposite is in fact true. Based on our in-depth research on the topic and in the interests of society, I therefore wish to clearly state here that I am strongly in favor of the fair use provisions as contained in the bill. And then he goes on. I thought it's important to say that when we talk about experts, we find that some of the opinions of the expert has been misunderstood. Dr. Squinbetter here is one of those who followed the proceedings and then saw it fit to write to correct that. So I'm presenting that. We wish to proceed, but let's have Honourable Faber, then we proceed. Dr. Masoja, I'm going to give up to you.
Chairperson, then if this panel of experts have said that it was clearly, according to what I now hear from you, that it was a misinterpretation on how they, as a committee or as a panel, decided on it, then I don't have a problem with that. But my problem was if the expert panel said that this bill, in its totality as it is there, is not going to be put down correctly, then this is the reason why I was saying then we cannot support it, because this is the reason why we get panel experts, because we're not one experts on that in that area as we're sitting here. But if the experts are okay with that, then I have to let myself be led
to agree with them, because they are the people knowing what's going on in their specific areas. We're not experts. Thanks, Jack.
Honourable Faba, I have the greatest respect for experts.
Yeah.
However, there is a particular process that we follow. Experts cannot give us just opinions.
But they need them.
The experts must say what amendments they have to the legislation that is before us. You would have noticed right from the start that I would say, is there a proposed amendment? If there's no proposed amendment, the opinion that they give us is not very helpful to us, because our task is not to just listen to opinions. Our task is to draft the legislation. And we do the legislation based on a bill that is before us. So the experts can give opinions. It's fine. But if there's no amendments, we will just note the opinion. It won't affect the legislative process. And what we are trying to do now is to finalize the legislative process. There is a bill before us, and we want to decide what will be contained in that bill. So, Honorable Masocha, sorry, Dr. Masocha, let's just, in response to the point raised by the Honorable Khai, you then have to just help us through that.
Thank you, Chair. All right, in terms of the metrics versus the presentation, on the 6th of March, we did present responding to the stakeholder submissions. And one of the first things I said was that we have summarized this document into a presentation format. So what was presented was the summary of this lengthy document. So it was, and also what we did was to theme the issues into different themes, summarizing the broader stakeholder submissions. And also we ensured that when we highlight issues, we also take into account who said which comments. But there are certain things I would like to further clarify, Chair, including the document, the email that you just read. So what happened was that from the parliamentary side, there was a summary that was prepared. And then we took that summary and we also utilized it to respond to the issues that were raised. And so there were many submissions within that that period. And in terms of his, Dr. Sean Vetter's specific issue, he is correct. I think it was more about how it was read, because he was talking to what other experts are saying. So it was read as though it's him who's saying that. So the initial interpretation was that it's as though it's him, but he was actually supporting the bill and indicating what are the broader concerns raised by different experts and answering to those concerns. So I would like to, for that process, acknowledge that, that it was an interpretation issue, because he did not necessarily spoke to his own view, but he also looked at what others are saying and responded to that, which was very good, because it gave a holistic view of what the views on the copyright amendment bills are and his view in terms of how we should look at it. So he is correct, and we really commend him also for caring so much that he would even go further to try to clarify that. And another concern that was raised was from the other groups. I will recognize the Recreate group, because they raised the issue around, including from Dennis Nicholson, that stakeholders' inputs, not all of them were incorporated. So what happened is that some of the stakeholders referred their submissions to the chair instead of to the other, it was a coordination issue. I'm not sure in terms of the electronical issues that might have impacted, but we received them later. So when we were considering the submissions, we did not look at them, and we apologize for that. But we did afterwards consider their contributions, and we updated the document as far as we can update it. So the written copies are around 140-something pages, because we did update, including Dr. Schoenwerter's input. So for all those stakeholders that felt that we kind of left them out, it was not intentional. So it was part of the processes, electronic and otherwise, how the documents were submitted. And furthermore, there was another issue around the experts. I need to clarify in terms of how the expert process came about. When the process of the bill was in the portfolio committee, there was a point where, because of the nature of copyright, and there was a point that we needed to include other people, experts, to look at the bill. And so the committee recommended some experts to assist, to look at the technical aspects of the bill, to look at the appropriateness of the language, the drafting, and also whether the bill was speaking to the policy. However, the experts were not necessarily meant to speak to whether the merits or demerits of the policy, but to look at the overall bill in terms of the substance, the drafting, appropriateness, alignment. So they were there to help us from that capacity. And most of them now, they are concerned that the department has said that they gave the bill a, they cleared the bill or verified the bill. So I want to clarify this, Chair, because it's one of those things that may have other implications. What happened was that they did assist us with the bill. We consulted them. They went through the bill looking at the terms of reference that they were given, and we considered their views to, as far as the process could go, because they had different views in some respects. And the point here is not to say that they've agreed with everything the department was saying or that we took everything they said. There were certain views that we felt were more policy related, and where we thought our policy and what they were recommending, there were some, we could not take the views, we did not take them. So there are experts who are of the view that we should have taken everything that they've recommended, but they have not necessarily cleared or rubber stamped the bill. The bill is still in a process. It is still under consultation. And so I want to just clarify that the points that we made on the 6th was not to say that they've cleared or that they verified the bill. And those views, if there were areas where that was said, it was not in the totality of the bill. It was certain aspects, but the verified or the cleared was along the lines of consultation. We consulted with them, we took their views into consideration where we could, and then we looked at them thoroughly. So that's what those words meant. So I'm clarifying that. So if after this there's that view, it's not necessarily what the department intended. So Chair, and now going forward, I'm hoping that clarifies the issue of the experts. From the last presentation, Chair, there were no amendments that we noted. What happened was that there were suggestions that were made before. However, most of them were saying reject. They were rejecting the policy positions that we have already taken. So we thought that on that basis, we looked at the views and we looked at some of the recommendations. But as you highlighted, Chair, most of the views were more broad statements. Like someone will say, this is unconstitutional, without saying recommend, amend section 1, 2, 3. There were no specific clear recommendations. There were those who recommended certain wording, and we did consider those words, but we will find that the recommendations were not taking away from the substance of what the bill already provided. And that was discussed at length as I was presenting. And yeah, I think overall that was the case. We did not end up with specific proposals to say this should be for amendment going forward.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we're going to vote now. But before we do, just allow me 1 minute to say that what has happened is that there has been an IT hiccup where there's a number of organizations that have made submissions in support of the bill. And when they looked at the summary that DTI has given, because they give us the hard copies of the document, they were looking for their names there. And because their names were not mentioned, because many organizations would say the same thing, and DTI wouldn't put all the organizations down, however. But I think it's important, because one of the persons that made a wonderful and helpful contribution, if we're talking about experts, is Denise Nicholson from the University of Johannesburg. And what she did was also then to send to me the names of those organizations that are missing. while their concerns are not necessarily ignored in the legislation. And there's 9 of them. Let me just read their names to them because it's important. The one is Education International. The second one is the Wits Scholarly Communications and Copyright Services Office. Blind South Africa. There was a person from Blind South Africa who came to see me personally to say how appreciative they are that we're giving protection to the blind people through the performance protection, but also in the copyright amendment. Then there was also Recreate that the DGG has mentioned. Then there was SA Right to Read Coalition. There's the Australian Digital Alliance. There's the African Library and Information Association. There's NAPTOSA. And then also the final one is the Eve Gray and Desmond Oriahokpa. Now, I just wanted to put that for the record. What we may find is organizations who say they've made submissions, they feel they've been ignored. It could have been a glitch in Rupaka's system, but what these people then did was to send the emails to me, and I would then verify that with Rupaka and give it to him. And even as the DGG has said, later than what we've given others to them, we'll have these new ones that come in and request them, and they have been very generous in terms of also taking those comments into consideration. The bottom line is that in our deliberations thus far, we have had proposals for amendments. We've not accepted any of it. So what I'm putting before you is that we'll do a report to the House indicating that we have gone through the process of Section 75 in terms of the NCOP rules, and we're presenting this bill and its amendments to the House for ratification. Is there any member that would want to register a vote against that? The Honourable Terblanche. Honourable Terblanche and Honourable Faber, this is a Section 75 bill, so we're voting as individuals. But it's not good to make a declaration as an individual. So you'll consult with your party, and then you'll make a declaration in the House on that. Can I also ask that once you have prepared your declaration, that you please share it with the Secretary, unless you have it now, then we can minute it. Do you have it now? No. Okay. Then you'll have to please share it with the Secretary so that we can have it as a record of the House. And then Honourable...
I'd say you started the other way around. I thought you were going to ask for those that are moving for the adoption, so I'm moving for the adoption of the copyright amendment.
Honourable Tikhale, you support that. You second that. Okay, and then we have the two hands.
No, three.
It's three hands. Okay. Okay. I don't know what section. Yeah, we vote as individuals in the House, not as a delegate from. Okay. So it's three and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 for it. Honourable Tetwa, can I just ask us to give us a clear indication? Oh, there's 6. Honourable Ntebe, because you did not vote. You did not register a vote against it, the correct assumption would be that you are for it. Okay, raise your hands for So there's 6. Okay. There's 9 of us. So it's
used to be 6 against 1, and now it's 6-3. Next population is...
Honourable members, just for the record, Tukaka just brought my attention, that's his job. This is in terms of rule 155.3 that we have voted on this matter now. Right? The question was put and you have responded to it, and the question is decided by the majority of the members present, that 45.3b and 45.3c is, if there's an equal number, the chairperson will have to decide. But we're sitting on 155.3b.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I actually have two votes, yes. Okay. Honourable members, are we happy that we've dealt with the Performance Protection Amendment Bill? Can we go to the copyright now? Okay. All right. Copyright. We have had a number of submissions, more than what we've had on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. We're not going to go through the process again. The DGG has indicated to us in our last meeting. We have had the presentation made to us. There were a lot of proposals for amendments. We have applied our minds to that. If I am correct, satisfactory answers has been given by the DTI on why we should not consider those amendments. So the bill that is before us this morning is actually one that we've deliberated upon. We don't have any amendments to that. However, it's important also to say to you that even after that date, I have received emails. I chose not to check with Quebecer. I have received a number of emails, particularly from international stakeholders that wanted to still lobby and propose changes, and we, in terms of the rules of the NCOP, do not accommodate those. Once it is closed, it is closed. The amendments, submissions, was meant to be made to the secretary of the committee to give us all time to consider them. Making proposals to me as chairperson does not help. I did not respond to any of that emails because I thought that I must first inform you as members of the committee. Then I will appropriately respond to them. But what I'm putting to you now is that we look at the Copyright Amendment Bill, bearing in mind that we have received a whole range of submissions on it. You have had the time to have the documents with you to look at them again, but the outcome of our meeting last week was that we processed the bill as we have received it from the National Assembly. Honourable High.
Honourable Chairperson, I would like to move for the adoption of the Copyright Amendment Bill, B-20, B-2017. Thank you.
Do you have anybody to second that? I second it. I second it. Oh, sorry, I wasn't looking up.
That's why I wanted to verify, because I just heard the voice. Honourable Mzanga seconds that. Okay, Honourable Treblanche.
Chairperson, I just wanted to put my stance on the report. Once again, I also extensively talked on that in our previous meeting. And, you know, in the meantime, as you rightfully indicated, there was a lot of responses from all over. I'm even aware that a letter was written to the minister. I'm merely mentioning that. And therefore, you know, obviously, my stance remains the same. To the fact that, you know, I cannot support it in its current format, well, and that I think that we, as a committee, are running the risk that, you know, eventually when it gets to the president, that he will not sign it into legislation, but that is obviously his decision, you know, on the advice of his experts, you know, obviously assisting him. But I just wanted, Chairperson, to explain my position, and therefore I don't support the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Blatch. Faber says amen to that.
Absolutely.
Honourable Mahuego, you support the non-support. Okay. Okay. Can I assume that we have the same situation where we then have three members not supporting and six members in favor of a report to the NCOP in favor of the copyright amendment? So it's six against three. And I will request again that you send me your... not your declaration, send me your reasons, not so that you, so that I can read the minority view in the House as well. Sorry. Quebec is very sharp this morning. Can we get that from you by 12 tomorrow? Because we give a report today.
I need to cup for coffee to work.
No, if you don't, if you can't give us the reason, then we'll say in the report that you could not give us a reason.
Okay, person, if I can just refresh your memory, I said that I spoke on this at the previous meeting, so you have it on record. And if you want something in writing, you are aware, Chairperson, that our whole day is full. I cannot, you know, I know I'm very good, but miracles is still a bit difficult even for me. So I'm not able to do that. If you want the Chairperson, the best that I can do, I can have it maybe by tomorrow sometime.
Honourable de Blanche, can I plead with you? You say that it is.
Yes,
sir. In the records of this meeting.
Yes, yes.
So it makes it easy, therefore, for you to cut and paste from that record?
No.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to reward you. I'm going to reward you. I'm going to give you lunch, and I'm going to give you off at 1:30.
Chairperson, as you know me, I will try my utmost best, but really I cannot have it easy done by 12. I'm just honest with you. Not by 12, sir. Best I can do is maybe, you know, promise it, but tomorrow is an official holiday, so you'll have it by Friday morning.
No, I'm making a ruling. I'm making a ruling. We accommodate the minority view. We are requesting that the minority view be submitted to Quebeca by close of business today. Otherwise, we'll have to file, because we can't have the process delayed. We'll have to file to the ATC what the minority view is. If we don't have it, we can't file it. Look, the general rule on Walter Blanche is that the minority view must be expressed in the meeting. So I'm being lenient. And we'll meet each other halfway by saying, let's give you the time. Because we did set aside the whole of today for this committee. And we'll be finished by 1:15 today.
Chairperson,
with our lunch.
You have my promise. I'll try to type it before the end of business today.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Tamlach. We appreciate that. Then you'll make sure that that gets 80 seats. Okay, then we've dealt with the second one. With the third one. My colleague?
Yeah.
It's 10 past 10. No, we'll proceed without them. Durko. Is there anybody from Durko here? Are you the only one, madam?
I'm unfortunately the only one here.
What is your designation?
I'm Zoe, I'm the parliamentary officer.
Sorry, I want you to share it with the members.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I'm Zoe, I'm the parliamentary officer. The notice that we got is that we're supposed to be sitting at 2. And at the moment, the advocate who normally comes and does the presentation is attending cabinet with the minister in support of the minister. There's a ICTS meeting there.
Okay. I didn't want to share this, but I'll share this with you anyhow, because it has been raised now. We're in the item of the Foreign Service Amendment Bill.
Yeah.
I spoke to the DG last night, which is a normal thing that chairpersons do, and indicated to the DG that our meeting is starting at 9. And indicated to him that if he wants to, he can come to the meeting at 9, as I said to you earlier on in this meeting, that we'll deal with that legislation first so that we can release the DG and his team. I assumed that the DG was calling me from the office of the PLO. So you're shaking your head, you're saying, yes, he was. Right. Because then the DG is the boss. The DG should give you instructions. Now, where I'm going to with that, Slubeka spoke to me last night so that we could get ourselves organized for today, and he wanted to call the PO back. And I said to him, no, it's not your instruction. The DG must give the PO instruction to be here by 9. That's not my thing. When I raised it with the DG, he didn't say that they're having problems with being here at 9. If he did that, I would have honestly shared it with you earlier. To hear now from a third source, while I have spoken to the DG directly, that he cannot make it and he thinks the meeting is at 2, for me does not fly. So I would want us to then proceed with that bill, the finalization thereof, without the DG being present. Honourable members, let me then just say two things. Martins, do we have the documentation on that?
Yes.
We don't have anybody here from Durko, therefore, that can help us with that. We'll see where that lands this bill. Martins will give us the documentation thereon. We discussed it last week. Let me just recap for you that we've had the department, the deputy minister, yeah, from public service and administration. We as a meeting had ruled earlier that we cannot accommodate the submission from the department that I received at the signature of the minister because it reached us after the closing date. So that was left aside. We then had presentation submissions, a number of them, but the main concern in that submission was the one about intergovernmental relations, the IGR. We asked our legal advisor of Parliament to give us a document before 12 o'clock the Thursday. We've received that document from Honorable High. Can I ask you to just move like that so that I can see all the other plants as well? No, you can move this way. That's fine. That's fine. Then, honourable members, what happened? We've received that document from Parliament's legal advisor. That document has been shared with you. I'll come back to that document now. The second thing was that Durko was then supposed to give us a document encapsulating their responses. I've seen an email to that effect. Martins, you were again not starting with me. So I don't know what documents we have before us.
How
is
this going to leave this room after the election?
Oh, here it is. Sorry. I have it here. The document is entitled Durko's Response to the Select Committee on Trade and International Relations on the Written Submissions, 14th March 2018. We have there the general issue, the stakeholder, the summary of the submission, the response from the department, and the response from the committee. Now, honourable members, I'm saying this under correction. Honourable Hai, you are very helpful in that. When we looked at the amendments that were made to us, we were struggling particularly with the amendment related to who the foreign service deployee would be accountable to. Is the person accountable to Durko, or is the person accountable to the department that has deployed them? The response that we got from our parliamentary legal advisor in that legal opinion is that such persons will continue to be accountable to their department. And we even raised it in the meeting. I remember I raised it. The second point that are before us, honourable members, was the last point there, clause 14. Clause 14. On page 8, where Durko has no objections to correcting the spacing in section 41B of the bill, provision is already made in 41D for the prescribed book to be contained in a regulation which will be published. So it's a minor thing, just the spacing. Have on page 1, clause 71A, related to the Diplomatic Academy, the explanation that was given in the meeting was that if you have, for example, a person from the Defense Force, that person only has to do 2 weeks training and do not have to do the full period of diplomatic training. Clause 8.1, the coordinating mechanism, again, that was explained in the document from our parliamentary advisor with regard to the inter-government relations. That both there, as well as in the Constitution, it is clearly spelled out that there must be coordination. Now, at a practical level, that coordination happens in cabinet between members of the executive and in the intergovernmental relations where, as I said before, the DGs, the deputy generals, will meet with the DG in the office of the president. Now, in my conversation with the DG yesterday, the DG reiterated that point that was in the original submission to us. That what has happened is that the department of International Relations and Cooperation have consulted in Cabinet and also otherwise with other departments of government. And I have to take them on their word, and I'm presenting to them what they have, to you, what they have sent to me. They have given us a written report that they have consulted with the other departments of government. I refer you, honorable members, to Chapter 3 of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, where there is an elaborate constitutional prerogative on intergovernmental relations. So that deals with the intergovernmental relations part in clause 8.1 of what is before us. Then I take you to page 2, honorable members, where we had the presentation from COSATO. Now COSATO, as well as the Public Service Association and members of the National Education, Health and Allied Workers Union, who are public servants but affiliated to COSATO, were having problems in clause 2, where we have the word the minister, that is the minister of DIRCO, may consult. Where the proposal before us was that the minister must consult. That has been answered to us last week by the legal advisor from DIRCO, as well as the parliamentary legal advisor, Ms. Atakari, has written a letter to us that has been copied to you, explaining that it's, as we say in Afrikaans, om het even. In English, it's neither here nor there. If it's may, the Constitution says must, and the Constitution is the highest law. And then in terms of IGR, that legislation on IGR, the IGR Act, is also very clear. In order to ensure coordination and cooperation between the different departments of government, there must be consultation. Okay? Are we happy with that? We've had the submission from Mr. Badenost, and he was more talking about the IT communication. I'm on page 3, the IT communication, and we say we note that it's not in this bill that is before us. We had the presentation from Elkot Matlala that was more related to immigrants, and I, without apology, want to say again that I consider it to be xenophobic. Now, that's my personal opinion, but it doesn't relate to the act. Then we've had the presentation, detailed submission from Professor Johansi van Wyk. Now, let me say to you just one thing about Johansi. Honorable Faber, when you spoke about the experts earlier on, what many of our departments of government are doing is to try and improve our relationships and also benefit from the academia. So different departments have different academics at different institutions that they're working with. I know, for example, the Department of Tourism works very closely with UJ, and they have many of their sessions at the University of Johannesburg. So DIRCO has been working with Professor Van Wyk, who's at, if I have it correct, the University of Pretoria. She raises similar submissions that she made to the Portfolio Committee. And therefore, the department responded to us, and I want to read their responses, that the matters that are noted as omitted from the bill are matters that will be dealt with in terms of internal policies. Remember, we heard this from DTI with the gambling bill all the time as well, where they're talking about regulations and internal policies. They were talking more about regulations. But then it goes further to say, and I quote, codes, directives, employment contracts, or other legislation, including the Labor Relations Act. As far as the inclusion of more definitions of terms are concerned, the department together with the state law advisors in the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development have made a thorough assessment of the definitions and concurred that the existing definitions would suffice. So Dr. Van Beek was giving a lot on the definitions, and that has been answered. Then also, I quote further on clause 3.1, brackets, A bracket, DIRCO, is of the view that the exercise of the international relations will always be in the national interest and values of the Republic. The insertion of a provision on compliance with the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa 1996 is not necessary, as all legislation and other conduct must be in compliance with the Constitution. The proposal to include seconded persons in clause 3.2 is unnecessary, as they are already envisaged to form part of the Foreign Service as provided for in clause 3.2, sorry, clause 3, brackets 2 of the bill. To include the words, I quote, a member of an official government delegation, unquote, or, quote, international organization, unquote, would be an extension of what is envisaged by the Foreign Service bill. Finally, the inclusion of special envoys and special advisors was discussed by the portfolio committee, and it was decided that you should be excluded as they are regulated under other mechanisms. Clause 4, security clearance, is dealt with under legislation regulating the State Security Agency, including the National Strategic Intelligence Act 1994, Intelligence Service Oversight Act 1994, and the Intelligence Service Act 2002. Provision is already made in the Public Services Regulations 2016 for the annual financial disclosure of officials. Now, Spongile, he is a member of staff here in Parliament working in our communications department, and I know that one of the protest points that the staff had was this matter of disclosure and vetting. Am I right? Okay, so members, there you have it. Now, how is dealt with that at the trade union level with the officials in government? Then, finally, reading from the page again, point 4.1, provision is made in clause 14.1b and c of the bill for the minister to make regulations on the prescribed requirements, less regulations, and prescribed mandatory training as referred in clause 4.1 of the bill. Okay. Honourable members, I'm not going to go further. That gives you a taste of how the department has dealt with it. Finally, do we have the parliamentary legal advisor here?
No, he's also coming to.
We're dealing with legislation, and the parliamentary legal advisor is not in the select committee? What is happening with the parliamentary legal advisor? We're dealing with legislation and they're not yet. Is it Nati? I spoke to him yesterday, and he was very kind and very nice to me. No, but that doesn't help. You're supposed to be here right from the beginning of the meeting. Because I have, honourable members, a serious constitutional point that I have not raised before. Let me raise it with you now so that you can engage on it in the meantime. If you look at the process now, an ambassador, right, is appointed by the President of the Republic. In terms of this bill, we're giving to the Minister and the DG the authority to decide to release an ambassador appointed by the President of the Republic. It sits uncomfortably with me. Now, I wanted to ask the parliamentary legal advisor, unless we have a legal advisor here that's also in Parliament, but working with No, you're just working with DTI. And I've seen so much of you there. I think you're serving Parliament. No, we can't ask for your opinion. We wanted to get... Are you in agreement with me, honourable members, that we need to get clarification on that, or do we proceed without it? We need to get the clarification. Okay, let's, while we're waiting on the parliamentary legal advisor, let's allow you to say anything else related to the document that is before us. Then we'll raise that question at the opportune moment. Honourable Faber.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I've gone through this, and I don't have a problem with the bill as such, so I'm in full agreement with this, but I also think that we have to get clarity on the point that you've just raised.
Thank you very much. Any other member? Honourable Khai?
I just want to find out, because last time also, where the idea has been sent, I don't remember receiving it, the legal advisors, routine view on the application of the law, the point that was raised by COSATU. We were promised that we're going to receive on page 2. So after the committee deliberated on this issue, it was advised by the parliamentary state law advisor that it is an established general rule of interpretation of the statutes that the FSB should take precedence on very specific issues, and we requested that it should give us a written legal opinion. Don't remember receiving.
We did receive it, Honourable Khai. I'm just trying to now see again. What is Nati's surname, Tlubega? How did the email come through? Sorry, Honourable Members, that Tlubega has emailed it. I saw the copy because Nati sent it to me and to Tlubega. I gave Tlubega a directive to release it. So he did send it to you, Honourable Khai, but I'm trying to just see how it was. Because I've received so many emails, Honourable Members, I've removed whatever I have read. Rebecca, do you have a copy of that letter from Nati, from Parliament's legal advisor? Martin, do you have copies there?
Yeah,
do you have hard copies? Just draw Honourable Khai's attention to that, please, Martin. Honourable Ted Black, just wanted to check with you, because you raised a strong position on the members of the Defence Force. Are you happy with the response given on that?
Chairperson, yes, I'm covered. I think that was nicely explained to us, and I'm in full agreement with that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Dikhale, you raised a strong position about the traditional authorities. Are you happy with that, with the response we've given? Happy. Thank you. Okay, Honourable Members, because the Honourable Khai has raised it, here is the letter from Parliament Legal Services signed by Advocate Atikari, the Chief Legal Advisor. Now, you know how it works in our world. You have someone doing the work, he submits it to the Chief Legal Advisor. She was here in the meeting last week. Though they're not here today, they were here last week. Please, sir. Yeah. You are not a member, so I'm not supposed to allow you to speak, but maybe you want to help us by just clarifying something.
So thank you very much, Chair. My name is Yabong Fongosha from there. I just wanted to inform you that the Chief State Law Advisor is on his, on her way to the meeting.
She's on her way.
Yes.
With the Advocate Atsikari.
Advocate
Advocate?
Devet.
Advocate Devet,
yes,
is on. But Advocate De Wet,
oh yes,
she's Parliament, yeah.
No, she's from Durkheim.
From Durkheim? No, we don't want Durkheim. We want Parliament. Okay, Advocate De Wet can come, but we don't want her. We want an advocate from Parliament. In terms of the procedures, the department has done what it has to do. It's better having, as I said last week, two opinions from lawyers, because they very seldom give us the same opinion. But it's better to have two opinions than one. So we welcome your information that advocate. Remember, Advocate De Wet was sitting here last week doing the presentation. But for us, as members of Parliament, we rely on the legal team in Parliament. We're still waiting, Rebecca. Is he here? Oh. You see, the wonderful thing about social media is that people make jokes. And then the recent one that I saw is these two guys in the boxing ring, and there's a small guy jumping around. And then when his fighter comes out, he's much taller than you. Now, I thought I'm going to fight with you when you get here, sir. But now that I see you, thank you very much for engaging. I did say you engaged with me earlier, but we were a bit unhappy that you were not here when we started. The parliamentary legal team has to be in the select committee meeting, particularly when we're dealing with legislation. Fortunately, we didn't need legal advice, but now we need it. So let me put it to you. Please introduce yourself to the meeting before I do that.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. Apologies, firstly, Chairperson, for coming late to the meeting. I had to attend to an urgent request of the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. My name is Natim Jenglane from Parliamentary Legal Services. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We have looked at the document that has been prepared for us by Durkheim. The general feeling of the House is that we're happy with it. However, I then raised a concern, which I'm putting to you now, and want you to help us on. The concern is that ambassadors are appointed by the President. In terms of this legislation, my reading thereof as a layperson, member of Parliament, is that ambassadors can be withdrawn by the Minister. And the minister delegates of her authority as well to the Director General as the accounting officer of the department. Is that scenario constitutional? Please help us with that.
Thank you, Chairperson. The structure of the hierarchy, Chairperson, as you explained, is what is envisaged in the legislation. And as far as I understand it, Chairperson, there is nothing untoward with the delegation of power from the President, the head of the executive, to the minister, and from the minister delegating that power to the functionary, being the administration in the department, which is accounted for by the director general in that department. And that's generally how the executive structure works, Chairperson. And certainly that arrangement is not changed in the proposed legislation. However, Chairperson, I would not be the one to speak with authority on the manner of how the executive is arranged in general terms. My colleague here, Sia Bongwan, who's from the Department of Derco, would be the one who would be able to speak authoritatively on how the structure and delegation of authority functions in the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm going to come back to you. Let's just heed your advice as well and give an opportunity to Durko to give us an indication of the structure.
Can I kindly request, Chair, that you wait for the Chief State Advisor to answer that question?
the chief state law advisor.
Yes, advocate, the vet.
The one is she from Derco or state law?
She's from Derco, but the chief state law advisor from Derco.
Oh, okay.
There she is.
There she is. There she is. Happy birthday.
The arrangement is normally that if you are late, you have to make tea for all. please take a seat. There's a seat for you next to your team member there. Advocate Tibet, we're going to throw you into the deep end. We've been discussing a matter. I'm going to give an opportunity to your learned friend next to you to speak to you while we continue. I'm going to give you 2 minutes, and then you will give us a response. Can I, while they're doing that, put to you the minutes of our last meeting?
Oops.
Martin, just when you think you're seated, then we... Honorable Khan, have you read the document from Advocate Adhikari? We did submit it. If you want to speak to it, I'm going to give you an opportunity still, if there's a need to speak to that.
Not now.
Let's deal with the minutes first, then we come back to the legal things again. Not since I don't have a copy. What did I do to you? Just because I'm not from KwaZulu-Natal, you treat me in this way. Honorable members, we have the meeting of the 13th of March.
Okay.
We looked at the negotiating mandates on the national gambling, and then also certain submissions in the Foreign Service Bill. We have on page 1 the members that were present, that Blanche is correctly spelled.
Thank you,
Peter. Mahwebu, we noticed that you sent us a medical certificate. We are glad that you have recovered. On page 2 is the names of the support staff and the members from the departments that were there. Page 3 is the summary of proceedings and the negotiating mandates. There is a very important point at the bottom of page 3. The committee rejected the amendments. On page 4, again the amendments and the committee's position on that. On page 5, the department was requested to submit the written responses, and then on 3.2, consideration of the written submissions on the Foreign Service Bill. That's the thing that is before us now. Then we adopted the minutes of the last meeting. Let me just read to you this part under COSATO. On page 7, under COSATO, the second paragraph that starts with the committee. The committee was not entirely satisfied with explanations provided by the department and the parliamentary legal advisor. The department was requested to further submit the responses in writing, and those responses are attached herein as an annexure to this minutes. Moreover, the parliamentary legal advisor also was also requested to provide, let's just put in here, was also requested to provide the committee with a legal opinion. That is the letter from the Advocate Adhikari that we have here. The legal opinion is also attached here too. Right. And then we adopted the minutes. These minutes were shared with all the portfolio committees in the provinces, which is procedure when we do with legislation. Can I have any amendments that anybody wants to make? If not, can I have a proposal for the acceptance of the minutes? Honorable Father, you're proposing acceptance. Okay, can we have somebody to second? Honorable Bihale. Okay, thank you very much, honorable members. Let's then go back. Honorable Chai, I want you to raise that in case that the legal team wants to need to respond to you. Honorable Chai is speaking on the letter that we've received from the advocate Antikari. Nati, you and I have spoken about that. Okay, Honorable Chai.
I'm not sure who it came from, but I wanted to speak on the clause on the application.
Is it in the letter or is it a new matter?
I think it is in the letter, but it's just that I didn't check who it came from at the bottom. The one that talks about let me just check where it comes
from.
Oh yeah, it comes from the advocate Adikar. Yes.
Take us to the page, please, Honorable Chai.
Yeah. It's the page. I think it's page 3, yeah. Page 3 at the bottom. It says the first part says clause 2 in brackets. That's it. Yeah.
Page 3.
Yeah, page 3. The top part. You got it?
Are we together, honorable members? On page 3, that under legal questions, there's the legal questions or the legal implications, and there's A and B. That's what Honorable Chai is speaking to now.
No. I'm speaking on 2.2. But it's the one that is up. The first one on the document. The first.
Right on top of page 3. Okay.
The point I wanted to make is that the point I raised last time is that my fear that this could be subjected to different interpretations. Whoever will be in charge, say as a manager in a particular country on behalf of South Africa could interpret this different from another, say, commissioner or head of mission in another country. That's my fear with this particular section. When it says this act will prevail, I understand that you, the legal officer, tried to explain it, that it refers to the provision from section 1 to 14 or clause 1 to 14. You try to explain, but still the way it's written here, it's subject to different interpretation. And given that it was not in the original bill from the department, I wanted to propose, Chair, that we should rather delete this to avoid this different interpretation, by different people in terms of understanding this section. Also, my fear that it will make also workers in this, that are covered by this FSB vulnerable with regard to different interpretations. So to avoid that, I wanted to propose that we should rather delete this particular, as I'm saying, given that it was even not in the original bill of the department in the first place. That's my proposal, Chair.
Honorable Chai, I understand your proposal, but not your motivation. Honorable Ntebe, then I'll come back to you, Honorable Chai. Honorable Ntebe.
Chair, I'm not sure if I'm not going to be taking you back. If you don't understand Honorable Chai, because I want to support him, then you must clear first the motivation, which part you don't understand, so that probably also in my second day, I might be clarified.
Okay, thank you. Because the Honorable High is saying it's not in the original legislation. Now, I'm having difficulties as well finding it in the Bill B24B. I can't see it here. Not because it's not there, but it could be because I don't know how to read it.
It was never in the original bill that was sent to the popular committee.
No, I hear that. But that is not reason to exclude it.
No, I'm just making a statement, but in motivating that. You see,
there are other laws that govern employees. Now, if you're going to have this blanket statement that says this particular law will take precedence over all the others, as if it is a constitution, I have a problem with that. For instance, this bill talks about also training. We don't know how it's going to conflict, for example, with the Skills Development Act. But here we just agree that it will take precedence over any other law. Yet there might be a section in the Skills Development Act that conflicts the issue that talks about training in this act, for example. So, but here we have already agreed that this one will take precedence over any other legislation. That's where my fear is. You know. So that's why I say to avoid even amending it so that it conforms to perhaps what we're trying to do. Let's rather delete it. Yeah.
Okay. Honorable, I'm going to come to you now. Because I was going to come to you, but I want to come to you with a motivation. Honorable Ntebe?
Chair, over the weekend I was looking at this clause trying to see whether I can be able to modify it. I couldn't. Now, one, this is my discomfort that I even raised in the last meeting. That in our endeavor to make legislation, even when there's anticipation that there might be issues that are going to be lost in the interpretation, we continue doing that. The reason why I support Honorable Khai that we must probably take the whole clause out is that in the last session when we raised with the legal guru, he said it is squarely within our wisdom as members to either maintain the clause or remove the clause. Now, from my part, I don't want to pass the law that is going to be somehow be lost in translation somewhere and take a coalition path with the other with the coalition path with the other laws that are existing. Secondly, the issue that this will apply if there be any other issues that are not clarified in relation to any other laws, it's ambiguous. And it should not be allowed to be in the report that we are going to be presenting in the House. I'm of the view, Chair, that this matter might be lost in translation. It is not adequately discussed and clarified to us. And from our view, we think that it is better when it is taken out so that there must not be that thing of lost in translation. All other laws that are applicable are quite clear as to what needs to be done. This law also needs to be clear on what needs to be done. And that's why I second that probably this clause must be taken out.
Thank you. Your motivation is very helpful, Honorable Ntebe. I have two positions on that. The one is that traditionally we have tried to use a language, the type of English that we use should be easily understood. And this is not helping us, this formulation. So there I agree with you. However, I think that my reading of what is before us is subject to what the legal team further needs to explain to us. Because when I read it, they are saying, but no, you have your IGR Act, but you also have your Labor Relations Act, and you also have, in this instance, the Public Service Act of 1994. Now, what I hear the Honorable Chai raising as a concern is particularly this part that says it is not possible to read the conflicting propositions as complementary to one another. Then, this act must prevail. That's a problem. This act must prevail. So let's have you responding to us, and let's give you a chance to do both. Faber is on the same matter. Okay, there's another one on the same matter, because I want you to then deal with both the first question that we've raised, but deal with this one first, and then you deal with the question of the ambassadors second. Honorable Faber?
Yes, Chairperson, I would just like to read this part of our legal guru where he says, any conflicting provisions between national legislation should be resolved on the basis of harmonization. Any law other than the specific special one would be preceded by the relevant provisions of the Foreign Services Act when promulgated, in circumstances where reconciliation harmonization would not be able to be possible. So I also think I want to agree...
Can I interrupt you? Because you said it's on the same matter, but it's not. I will allow you, but you just need to make sure that you refer us to the right place that you're reading from. That's my question. Where are you reading from, Honorable Father?
Chairperson, I'm saying if you look at page 6.
Yeah, that's a different page, you say.
Okay. But I'm trying to say is where we are having two laws that might be in conflict, which Honorable Ntebe was talking on, where it must be on a basis of harmonization between the two laws. Are you with me,
okay,
Chairperson?
Do you follow that one, legal team? We're talking here about this act, which is the Foreign Service Amendment Bill, and we're referring to the Public Service Act. Now, Honorable Faber is also talking, if we look at these acts, there is on page 6 the reference to the harmonization. So speak to that for us as well. Okay, thanks.
Can I come in before them, Chair?
Okay, and Honorable Tebe.
I'm just trying to locate process. We spoke on this matter at length. Mm. We also have the legal opinion. What else do we need from you?
We need an explanation of the legal opinion so that we can make an informed decision. Remember the legal opinion that was given to us last week on the was oral, and then we said submit it in writing. Now that they've submitted it in writing, we are saying that that's very helpful, but helps us to understand if the interpretation is the way that Honorable Chai has put it to us. Then we make a decision.
But they have not changed in terms of what they said last week to what they are saying now. They have not changed. Not even one word. So what they said verbally, they have just reduced it to writing.
Do you and Honorable Dikhale and myself interpret it in the same way?
Interpretation is subjective.
No, we can't say that, Honorable Tebe. I agree with you that interpretation can be subjective. But we need to make a decision. All right? Honorable Tchai puts a proposal. You second it. All right? And I admit it that for me, I'm having a difficulty because it's still not clear. So I want to hear the interpretation.
I'm in your hands, Chair.
Huh? Thank you, Honourable Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, Chairperson, may I, in order to give a total answer to the issue that the members have raised, may I please request your indulgence that my colleague, advocate sitting next to me, explain the issue that the members are raising in regards to this clause not having been in the bill as it was introduced in the National Assembly, and why it is that by the time it came there, it had this clause, which is now subject of discussion. And then I'll speak to the issue of the legal opinion, Chairperson, and how the interpretation in the event of conflict between this legislation and general legislation should be dealt with in law. Thank you.
That's all, yeah.
Thank you, Jay. And again, apologies for being late. Jay, just to say that this clause came about as the hearings of the portfolio committee discovered the difficulties that we have with administering the foreign service abroad. This particular act will only apply to those people that serve abroad for a period of them serving, and it would not be, usually it would be 4 or 5 years. So it is a very, very specific group of people. And you know, just a practical example of what we faced in the past is, we would, for instance, have a situation where a diplomat, and I speak openly, a diplomat will drive under the influence of alcohol, that diplomat will cause an accident, a person die in the accident or are seriously hurt. The receiving country would they then say, please remove this person. Then we get letters, so we are now as a country, in terms of our international obligations, we are under pressure to recall that person. Recall is not prescribed in any part of the legislation. You can go to public service, the Public Service Act, all of that. So in the case of a person serving abroad, where there's that such an instance, we had to put in place legislation or rules that will apply to that situation. Now we would get a lawyer's letter. So what will happen is the department would say, look, you have to come back. You have to immediately come back. We will get a letter from the lawyers of that person challenging that decision to say that in terms of the Public Service Act and the Labor Relations Act, you need to go through A, B, and C. While we have a situation where that country is saying, if you don't recall that person, we are withdrawing him, we are deporting him. So there are specific areas where we need to be absolutely sure that officials would know that if there are either a conflict or nothing is applicable, this bill will apply in those instances. And we go out from the standpoint that you are employed in terms of the Public Service Act, or you are employed in terms of the Defense Act or the Spooks Act or whatever act you are employed on. We don't touch that. But what this act needs to regulate is to tell you, please, there are certain circumstances that are extraordinary and that are very specific to you having the privilege to represent your country abroad. And for those areas, and all of those areas, if for instance, and we have said we will create rules around recall, for instance, or if we close down a mission abroad, and you have all said that the budgetary implications are there, President Ramaphosa and Minister Mweni, even in his budget speech, spoke directly to our minister to say we have to look at rationalization of our missions. We will be regulating that situation specifically. Persons will still be employed in terms of the Public Service Act. The Labor Relations Act will still apply. For those areas where we have to create new systems that will be applicable to the people abroad for that term, we will, of course, in terms of this bill, go through the collective bargaining process. So that is why the unions were quite satisfied with this very specific arrangement. Now, it's important, we were then very happy that the portfolio committee said it's important to have this in so that you don't get challenged
consistently on decisions being taken, because there are things that are not regulated by the Public Service Act, because the Public Service Act is particularly applicable to those that serve in South Africa. And that's why the whole idea of creating a foreign service bill to deal with those very specific diplomatic issues were important. So, and it's not a question of this bill supersedes everything. And here I will leave that to my learned friend that is much more clued up on how the law works in this area than I am. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just to preface the answer to or at least what we've put in our legal opinion in relation to this perceived or real conflict between this legislation and any other legislation. This legislation, Chairperson, the proposed one, is not the first one where a clause such as this one has been included, the superseding clause. It's called superseding clause in legislation drafting. We have laws that are applicable currently, amongst which you can count the MPRDA, which is the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, passed by Parliament, amongst many others that we know of, including the laws on environmental management, have this so-called superseding clause. So it's a clause that is in legislation. It's not unheard of, which is why we're saying it's not unlawful. It's not legally offending that there is such a clause. And number two, Chairperson, the rules of interpretation where a conflict between legislation cannot be reconciled, or firstly, the rule of interpretation is that where there is a conflict between laws of the same status, meaning national laws, there should be a reconciliation between the two laws to try and find the purpose for each of those laws and to answer the legal question that arises. So whether you have this clause or you do not have this clause, the issue of conflict is inevitable in legislation. And the courts have dealt with this matter. We mentioned in our opinion that there are two matters, firstly by the Constitutional Court in the certification of the KZN Constitution, where the court dealt with this matter and accepted that the conflict between laws of equal status is inevitable. But the role of interpretation, there, is essentially to try and reconcile the legislations. In the event that you cannot reconcile, it is then that the special one, or the one specific to the issue at hand, must supersede the one that is dealing with a general issue. That rule is a common law rule known as the lex specialis, as we've explained in the legal opinion. It's a common law rule which has been accepted in terms of Section 173 of the Constitution. It has been developed. It is incorporated into the jurisprudence as developed by our courts in the decisions I've mentioned, specifically by way of example. So there is no inconsistency with the Constitution. There's no illegality with having a clause such as the one that is in clause 2 of the bill. However, as Chairperson would remember, in our presentation on the oral opinion we gave last week, we said the ultimate decision on what should go in the legislation vests with the committee. The committee decides what should happen. However, if it was the committee's concern that in the application of this legislation that we are passing, there will be conflict in the future, our view is that that conflict is not a conflict that does not exist or will not exist because you have taken away this clause. Because you only take away this clause, but all the clauses that are will purportedly conflict with other legislation will still be in this legislation. And the same interpretation rules that apply with this clause or without this clause will still apply, where you will first reconcile the two acts, and if it doesn't reconcile, or for some reason the reconciliation cannot happen, then the special one. And if it is a matter relating to foreign service, this foreign service bill that you are dealing with now, if passed into legislation, will supersede any conflicting legislation where reconciliation cannot happen, with this clause in the legislation or without this clause. That is the essence of our legal opinion, Chairperson. But as I say, Chairperson, we don't take away in our legal opinion the power of this committee to, that we do not intend to go into an area of deciding what should go and what should not go, because that is the decision of the committee. But the last paragraph in our legal opinion, we just warn and say that this matter was ventilated in the committee before it came here in the other house, And that if it was so felt that an amendment must be made, I'm just talking about the practical implementation, the practical implications, Chairperson, for whichever way the committee goes. In terms of the rules and the constitution, because this is a Section 75 bill, whatever changes are made in the committee would have to go back to the NCO, to the National Assembly, for the National Assembly to consider them, either take them or not take them, as recommendations of this committee. And the opposite of that, Chairperson, is where the committee was not making a change in the legislation, the legislation would be sent to the President for assent. And there are just practical implications around that, procedurally, in terms of the rules. That's the issue that we raised in the very last paragraph of our opinion, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we get to the second part of the ambassadors, I anticipated that your responses is going to invite further engagement. I noticed two hands of members going up. Honorable High, just before I allow you, because I wanted to add to the response from our lawyers, if we look at the bill itself on page 3, what I've learned is to quote the paragraphs properly. So you have line 37, where it starts there with 2.1 under the application of the Act. I feel that it's important that we should read that 2.1 aloud. 2.1 says, subject to the provisions of this Act, subject to the provisions of this Act, the conditions of service of members of the Foreign Service must be governed by the law governing that employee's conditions of service. Then it adds the point that you are raising, where this Act conflicts. So if we may use my layperson's language, I would say 2.2 is subject to 2.1. So we're saying all the other acts will apply first, and then this one, in what the legal opinion now is as well. Honorable Hai?
The explanation has not persuaded me to withdraw my proposal. In fact, they are motivating for me that this clause must be deleted. It's especially the example by an advocate, that if a person in a foreign country commits an offense, and therefore this bill will be the one, I mean this act will be the one that will take precedence. That alone motivates me to say, let's delete this clause. And she further says that this was explained to unions, and unions were satisfied. Yet here, we're dealing with the submission last week of the biggest federation in the country with the biggest membership of the public service workers. And it's a very federation that is making submission on this particular clause. So I don't take the point that where unions were satisfied. So I'm saying, Chair, I don't know what the feeling of other members, but I still feel that this clause must be deleted.
Okay, Honorable Ntebe.
Chair, Advocate Vet has just confirmed what was my argument last week, that in our endeavor to regulate industrial peace and industrial behavior, we must find means and ways of regulating it in a proper way, not through the Foreign Service Bill. Because industrial peace and industrial behavior can be subject of probably Labor Relations Act or whatever, when people do not conduct themselves in the manner that is expected of them. Now, if you have such in the Foreign Service Bill, and the intention is to, because I asked in the last time that, is it not because of what we see in the public dominion that there are some disturbance of industrial peace in foreign missions, there are some disturbance of industrial peace in some of the other missions that we have throughout the the globe. And the answer at that time was that no, but there needs to be a streamlining of how foreign service was regulated. We accept. But now the explanation is saying, in the situation where matters arises of behavior and disturbance of industrial peace and all those things, these issues will be then taken through the Foreign Service Bill and all other relief. So why don't we have a clause that says, probably, and I want to test this, why don't we have a clause in the Foreign Service Bill that says, in issues that are impacting on industrial peace and behavior and all other related issues, the applicable laws would be the Labor Relations Act, and on issues of training, it shall be the Skills Development Act. Is it doable? Thank you, Chair.
Ndebe, I'm going to ask you to just write that down so that you don't forget it while it's still in your mind.
And you know me. He's gone already.
And Rebecca is on this phone.
Recording it.
Yeah.
Close to.
I'm trying to take us forward. So give me a Barbara. I want to ask if I need to support Honorable High. Why do we need that clause? Because if we lead 2-1, if you are employed in the Foreign Service, you should be subjected to the same laws that applies to everyone else in South Africa. Why do we need that special 2-2? The answer given by Advocate De Wet, or the reason for 2-2, was an example on the misbehavior of a particular person within the Foreign Service in another country. And I would then have to ask, is there appropriate legislation to deal with that if we remove it from this Foreign Service Bill? But before I allow you, I just want to make sure, let's have the Honorable Mahwebu and then come to you, Honorable Tibet.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to perhaps raise the following, just two things. If these two issues, as the legal opinion from Parliament, is that this issue, whether we remove or we do not remove the issue of legislation will always, you know, a conflict, and then there is a rule that should apply in juridical interpretation that, you know, we must reconcile, and then if you can't, then you use the superseding clause. Now, that's the legal position. Now, I think us as Parliament, we have to then say, what do we stand to lose if we were to keep this clause because of the reasons the legal advisors alluded to, that the conflict of legislation is inevitable. It's always been there. It will always be there, even if we remove or keep this clause. Now, if you look at that and also look at Advocate Divert's issue of in the Department of Trade industrial relations, the issue they're grappling with, because they said they found that there is a gap where the Public Service Act does not regulate these instances, and they're dealing with issues of litigation every day when they want to take a position. Now, as members of Parliament, we'll have to perhaps strike this balance that says, if we keep the legislation and pass this legislation as it is, then we then close that gap immediately. Or if we choose to look at with these technicalities and when there is no, some you know, doesn't diminish the spirit and the purport and the of this legislation, then why should we not proceed with this legislation as it is without removing this clause? Because if we change this clause, which to me there's no benefit in doing that, it would then mean that because it's a Section 75, it must go back to the NA, and then that will not, that will, to me, in my view, lead to what I would probably see it as an undue delay in passing this legislation. So my view is that, Chairperson, if there's no prejudice legally in this issue, then in my humble view, this issue of removing or keeping, it should not be the issue that keeps us scratching our heads. It remains an issue that is neither here nor there. Let's keep the legislation as it is, and then proceed with the process of finalizing the legislation without returning to the NA. It's just my take on it. Thank you.
No,
I want to get the legal opinion first, because I know that you are like me, looking at it from a political perspective. Right. So I want us to hold our thoughts on that. Let's get the legal thing, and then we can deal with it politically as well. Respectfully, Honorable Khan, please. Let's get the legal opinion on clause 2-2.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the purpose of including a clause such as the one, the superseding clause, is as I mentioned, where an interpretation problem arises, then you must go into the rules of interpretation, and those are mostly settled by the courts that give the definitive interpretation of the court of conflicting legislation, or that settle conflict between two offending legislations. But if you want legal certainty, Chairperson, in reference to a particular piece of legislation, can you include the superseding clause? For instance, if there was an issue related to foreign service, which is also regulated by another general legislation, by merely looking at that superseding clause, you would have settled the question, because you refer to a strong rule in legislation that says, in the event of conflict, this one supersedes the other. You do not need to go into the interpretation where you must go and determine what the purpose is of the two legislations to determine which one should supersede. So, Chairperson, as I've mentioned, we stand by the legal opinion that we've written on the basis of the legal authority as indicated in the opinion that we provided the committee. And to answer that question, or simple answer to the question, that we have the superseding clause in order to maintain clarity in legislation. However, the effect of it is as explained to members already and also indicated in the legal opinion. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Khai, let me deal with the politics, just two issues quickly. Dr. Masoja, the DGI appoints you to go and work on trade relationships with a foreign country. You then engage in unacceptable or deviant behavior. Somebody reports you to the DG. The DG refuses to take action. Ergo, then has the authority in terms of this legislation to kick you out, whether you're employed by DGI or not. Am I right? That's the danger of that clause, and that's what Cossato is raising as a problem. That this law now supersedes the Labor Relations Act. That's what we mean by that. But let me just advocate, deal with it so that you can answer. I like what you are doing. You see, the point that is raised by Honorable Mokhwebu, where I'm saying Honorable Khai, because you see, in Honorable Khai's motivation, and I looked at the presentation of Cossato that is here before us, Cossato is raising it. But you see, the party that Honorable Khai and I are representing
have a particular relationship with Kusato, and it's an open secret. Right. So we hear that with a different year, particularly during the historical period in which, as a country, are finding ourselves now. So I'm trying to say, let's not leave that to Honorable Khaya and ourselves. We'll deal with the politics. You deal with the legislative part thereof. But I looked at the Honorable, sorry, at Dr. Masoja's expression, and it's worrying for us. Because you see, the other thing also that you need to bear in mind, we have 9 departments of government that we're dealing with. Right, and many of them have people abroad. I mean, I mentioned DTI as one. When we travel abroad, like when we were in Argentina for the World Trade Organization meeting, we saw nobody from the embassy. Because the minister was leading our delegation, we were received by senior officials of the Department of Trade and Industry in Buenos Aires. They arranged our transport, they looked after us, everything was done by DTI. Not that DERCO wasn't doing its work. It was because of that harmonization that has happened between these two departments. The Department of Tourism reports to us. When we were in Singapore, we were saying, but what are you doing in terms of promoting tourism? The question that we always raise, how many offices do we have in China? Because there's lots of tourists that we can attract from that. The Department of Small Business Development, we know small business plays a major role in the global economy. So we're looking at how we can also utilize them. DTI on a regular basis takes people on these exhibitions overseas. So all these things are in the back of our heads when we look at that and raises concerns. It's not only for the workers that COSATO is raising, but also for the workers that we are relating to in the different departments of government. I want to mention and conclude with the Department of Transport. I mean, if we look at the people involved in that industry, and we know what's going to happen with the focus on the Continental Free Trade Area on construction work. Many South African construction workers are going to start working in Ghana. Now, they are not working for DERCO, right? They need to be protected. And we are saying that they will deal with the, they will be protected by the existing labor legislation. But now if there's somebody from DERCO, then suddenly a different piece of legislation applies to them, as if the Labor Relations Act is not sufficient. Help us there, please, advocate.
Thank you, G. And I just want to take us through, I've perhaps chosen not a good example of the recall of members. I was just saying that there are certain types of recall that is nowhere regulated, and that would be that you can be immediately recalled without waiting for processes to happen. That has not been dealt with at all by any other legislation. But if we can just go, and I will specifically look at what you are, that members are concerned about, it is very clear in terms of the clause 6 of the bill that you will be, as far as disciplinary matters are concerned, the disciplinary code applicable to a member, if you are in defense, your disciplinary code and the labor laws that are applicable to you will apply. There is no question about that. Then as far as the recall of somebody from another department is concerned, because we have gone through so many consultations on this, we understand the sensitivity of it. We say in this, in clause 6-7, for instance, the Director General, this is now from DERCO, may only recall a member of the Foreign Service that is employed by a national department other than the department on the written request from the head of that national department where that member is employed. So we have, as far as we thought we could accommodate it, the fact that those people that are serving in the Foreign Service might be members of DTI or Home Affairs or SARS or Transport or Labour Department, wherever they are found, their particular legislation will still be applied. Where we find instances where the Public Service Act is not, has not spoken on certain areas, for instance, the Public Service Act has no extraterritorial application. It is within South Africa. Now, what we do with this is, we are saying that when you are going abroad as a member of the Foreign Service, the Public Service Act, all the legislation that are applicable will be applicable to you. And we appeal to the members to understand that we cannot afford to litigate each and every time we have an issue on whether the Public Service Act does not provide for this. Let me go to another example. We have, in this bill, we have found that there are so many concerns that people that are posted abroad don't have adequate training and don't have adequate and specialized training as far as how to deal with the world outside and how to do their work abroad. So we have now, in this bill, have a requirement for that there might be mandatory training prescribed to by the department. That would be your protocol, that would be all types of things that relate directly to the Foreign Service abroad. That does not replace your own department-specific training, but it adds a layer. Now we will find a situation where people will come to us at the present stage where there's no legislation to say, but we don't need to come and sit with your courses. There's nothing in the Public Service Act that provides that we must sit through your courses. We want to address that because we want to create a Foreign Service that is seamless, that will represent the department without even people from outside knowing from which local department you are actually from. Foreign Service, comprehensive professional service. So the reason why we were happy with this is that it has been included in other legislation and it will give legal certainty to us in the daily operations of this. We have found ourselves embraced and embattled in so many court cases that takes very long to resolve, and that in the end, if only there were certainty as to what is applicable. So that is our only plea. We are not taking away any provisions of or any protections from what is already applicable to employees in the government, in National Treasury, in the other specialized services. So I just want to say that the concern raised is actually addressed in the particular paragraphs of the bill, and that is all I can put on the table for now. Thank you.
Well, hi.
I think now the committee must decide now. So I want to request that the don't go back to the legal people now for suggestion. Let us decide as a committee. Procedurally, I have proposed and was seconded by Honorable Ntebe. So if our motion is defeated, that will be fine if it is not supported. Because all the, the first point, the first time that the DECO came to present here, my first comment was that this is a HR or standard operating document. It's not a law that you will bring to us. You coming to us to assist you to deal with HR issues in the form of a bill. That's the point I raised previously. Now all the issues that you are raising again here are HR related matters. Now you want us to come up with a bill to address HR-related matters that you can use your disciplinary and grievous code to address them, not in the form of legislation. Now, so that's why I'm saying that procedurally I've made a proposal. This issue of
of that we should not make amendments because these amendments will go back to the and it's a norm. It's a norm. NCOP is not here to ratify or rubber stamp what the NA has proposed. We can't say because now this thing must go to the House. After the House, it must go back to the NA. If we have an amendment, it will have to go. It's not the only law. Yesterday, we're dealing with National Land Transport Amendment Bill. We had lots of amendments, and those amendments are going back to the NA. So there's nothing new. So if we're not happy with a particular clause and we make an amendment and that amendment goes back to the NA, so let it be. So we cannot be intimidated by saying, oh, if you don't do it now, if you pass it, it will go straight to the president to sign it. But if you don't, now it must go. We know that. We know that. But we're not happy with this particular clause. But I'm saying as I formally, procedurally, I've made a proposal that was seconded. Perhaps it's for you to check the feeling of other members. If we are defeated, then that's fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hai. You've been very helpful. Can I just, on behalf of Honorable Hai, says, when he's looking at you, he's not necessarily referring to you. That's a problem that we have in this house. You only have one person. I noticed earlier on myself as well, you could see me talking to Honorable Ted Blanche as if I'm only talking to him. So he's not talking to you. And he feels strongly about the point. Honorable members, I rule that what we do is to hear. There's a proposal before us. The proposal is seconded. Are there any counter proposals to that? Honorable Ted Blanche and Honorable Faber.
Chairperson, say. Thank you. I really, you know, when we started with this, I hope that we'll be able to agree on this one. But, you know, and, you know, it's not about me, but I also have a legal background, and I specifically understood very well what legal people told us. And based on their explanation, and, you know, what this bill wants to achieve, I really need to support what they say. So I am supporting the bill as it is because, you know, obviously that is exactly that will allow us to have a proper integrated professional service, and that is my input, Chairperson. So I support the bill as it is with that clause. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Papa.
Chairperson, I'm not going to repeat everything that was just said, but I also agree we asked for the legal opinion, we got it, and we got a nice explanation now, and I fully support that.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, we have two counter-proposals. Normal meeting procedure is that you vote on the second proposal first. Okay, those in support of the proposal that we leave that clause as it is. So there's three members in favor of that. Let's vote on the first one. Those in support of the proposal by Honorable Hai that that clause be deleted completely. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So, no, the chairperson only votes when there's a hand. I don't need to vote. Honorable members, so... So we agree, there's 6-3. What needs to happen, therefore, is we need to refer the Foreign Service Amendment Bill back to the NA, requesting them to remove that particular clause. That's one. Honourable members, we'll be finished soon.
You go against it.
it's the abnormal to regulate for itself. This members are right. Why do you need this? It's a bit redundant.
Yeah, I think there is gaps in the law when it comes to overseas.
But this is what Kai is saying. They those are age
as Chair, there seems to be a change of heart on my
chief.
I want to agree with that.
You do not need a piece of
But I think like for their legal certainty, I think it's a legal issue.
But I'm not going to lie. This process is confusing.
Honourable members, can I call own the house again? I just wanted you to then also deal with that point of the ambassador. And it relates to what you have referred to now under clause 6 on page 4. Which is the recall of a member of foreign service, where it says a member of the foreign service may be recalled to the Republic by the Director General. Page 4 of the bill, clause number 6, recall of a member of foreign service.
Thank you, Chair. This has also been a matter that's been in the courts for many, many years. Finally, in 2017, there was a constitutional court judgment on this, the Gangit matter, and that was finally clarified. The reason is that this is not unconstitutional. The President appoints somebody as an ambassador. The regulation of that appointment is done through a contract. The contract is signed as in terms of the Public Service Act, and that act is gives the accounting authority is given to the Director General. So in the Gangit case, this whole issue of who can recall was indeed considered by the Constitutional Court, and the Constitutional Court indicated that because the fact that the President appoints you, you sign a contract, and in terms of that contract, the accounting officer is the one that regulates your employment. That the minister of DIRCO is the one that would in liaison with the president. That's now the practical side will deal with this issue and gives the director general then the instructions, and the director general is the one that will recall. That is in 2017 Constitutional Court on the Gangit matter. Thank you.
Honorable Ntebe.
I'm sitting next to an aspirant ambassador. Yes, he's very anxious.
Poland. Are you speaking on the topic?
Yes, Chair. My question. I'm going to be straight to the point. So is it my and I respect that in our country final arbiters of legalities are courts. So I respect what the Constitutional Court has said. Is it my understanding that the DG only comes in as a matter of practicalizing a decision of the consultation between the minister and the president?
Yeah. From the explanation.
Provide us with a direction.
In practice, that's exactly how it will happen. In practice, it will happen. The DG wouldn't wake up and recall an ambassador. There will be consultations between the minister and the president, but the one that gives effect to this in terms of any legislation is the accounting officer of the Public Service Act, and in this case, it would be DIRCO's minister. But the decision will be taken much higher than that. The implementer will be the DG.
I think that the
first time now you know you're not on my table. I think I agree.
I think this is why will be the politics there, you know.
No, you see, I might know better later.
That's their politics.
Honorable High. Where I'm, for example, saying, so what inhibits us from saying, on the advice of the president, and the minister, the DG will. But I don't know how we draft legislation. I'm not a a specialist in drafting. So, Advocate Devet, why don't we put it that way? Just help us to understand that, please.
Our understanding is that the execution of the appointment of the often a head of well of a head of mission is done through a contract. If we now go, and the contract is signed by the Director General as the accounting officer, we are very exposed to being in court all the time. And if the moment you are now saying that they must act on, he must act on advice from the President and the Minister, the exposure of that would be so big, because in, let's be honest, in truth it might be a telephone call. This is the reality we're facing. There might be situations where there's no second to think about this. So we want to limit that exposure of our principals as far as possible. So we believe that when we have a contract signed by the DG, the DG is the executor or the executor of that. But the actual decision to withdraw or to recall is never on the level of a Director General. That is always on the level of the Minister in consultation with the President. The moment you write it in legislation, it will be challenged. And I think we are absolutely fatigued with litigation, and that is the only reason why we don't want to put in the consultation, but because these things sometimes really happen over the phone.
Honourable members, I'm going to conclude the meeting now, but I want to just make a few comments in conclusion. I see the Honourable Ter Blanche wanted to speak before I conclude. Let's allow you, please, sir.
Chairperson, I just wanted to say, you know, just to add to what the advocate said, you know, obviously if we do include that in the bill, you know, you can create a situation where you're going to have the state president in court defending decisions that was taken to recall blah blah blah, stuff like that, and even the minister. And just in the last thing, there is a principle in law saying that don't state the obvious. That, you know, that is a principle in law, that so it's not necessary to mention that in law. But I think the one that I really wanted to mention is the fact that we are going to possibly expose the state president to go and defend stuff in court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Masocha, Dr. Masocha.
On the same matter.
Jana. We're coming back to the other matter just now. Okay. I just wanted us to vote on that. My attention has been drawn back to the process related to the gambling amendment bill. I've noticed that. Members, I have it properly that on the Foreign Service Amendment Bill, the majority of members present in this select committee, 6-3, votes that clause 2.2 has to be removed in its entirety. And we will report that to the NCOP. Now, Kupeka said to me that the NCOP will then have to vote on that. But Honorable Dikhale, that's your space of expertise. I was trying to look at the rules, and I only have two eyes, and I need to look at you and can't look at the rules as well. But there may be, honorable members, a particular process that would be followed in the NCOP if we are making such an amendment. And the NCOP may, for example, say, but no, we want to vote on that. I don't know. Honorable Khai, if you can help us on that. I'm giving you the position, however, that the decision of this House is that we are a majority that says that clause 2.2 has to be deleted in its entirety. Honorable Khai.
Chairperson,
So the approach in the House is that you'll be tabling the report on the FSB, but then you will indicate that the bill has been passed with amendments. Whether it has amendments or no amendments, we'll still vote in the House. In any case, we vote for any law, whether it's Section 76, or even if you are unanimous, we still vote on any legislation. So it's nothing new. We are still going to vote in the House on this particular bill. In fact, all the bills in the House, we vote for them. Even if we 100% in support, everybody in the House agrees, but we still vote. So that will be the procedure that will be followed. Thanks, Chair.
Covered you, that's very helpful. Very helpful.
On that one is closed. Thank you very much to the two legal minds that helped us to struggle with these things. No, it's closed. I want to go back to the National Gambling Amendment Bill and say two things, honourable members. I have said to you what the mandates are. Quebec says to me that's not procedurally correct. Procedurally, we have to do what Honourable Hai did yesterday, that we go through each of the amendments one by one. It's not for me as chairperson to tell you.
What do you want?
The delegates there. No, province by province, not clause by clause. You delegates there must read the amendments to us. That's point one. Point two, if we then look at it, I'm informed that we don't have a 4-3 scenario. We have a 3-3, 1-2. Now, Honorable Dikala, I'm going to come back to you again to help you on that. Let me tell you what I'm saying. Three provinces has voted for it. Three provinces has voted against it. One province has abstained. Two provinces have not given us mandates. Now, Honorable Stradom, you were there with us when we were struggling with another bill to help us with the rules. Can I give you my rule book to just look and advise us on that? Not immediately. I just want us to go through the process first. Oh, there's a legal advisor there as well. There's a legal person from Parliament as well. No, because he was in Parliament before he went to DTI. Just look at what the rules are saying, what do we do in the instance that I have mentioned. Honourable members, can we look then at the mandates from Eastern Cape? Eastern Cape, speak to us on that, please. Sorry that I'm doing this.
This one says, the chairperson of the National Council of Provinces, name of the National Gambling Amendment Bill.
Chair, he's not speaking on record.
Sorry. The name of the bill is National Gambling Amendment Bill. The number of the bill is B27B 2018-7. The date of deliberation, 19 March 2019. Vote of the legislature, the province is not in support of the bill in its current form and mandates the Eastern Cape Permanent Delegate to the NCOP to abstain from voting on the bill. Regards, Deputy Speaker, Mr. M. Kobosia, MPL, Eastern Cape Provincial Legislature. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Can we get somebody reading Gauteng for us, please? Sikhale, you normally step in.
Thank you, Chairperson. The Gauteng Provincial Legislature agreed to mandate the Gauteng Permanent Delegates to the National Council of Provinces to vote against the National Gambling Amendment Bill, signed by the Honourable Speaker, Honourable Ndombi Mefe, on the 19th March 2019. They don't have a say, but they are supporting those who are very rich, naturally. What can
that last comment we'll talk about over lunch. KwaZulu-Natal, Honourable Tetwa.
Well, thank you, Chair. I will read the final mandate from KwaZulu-Natal. The name of the bill, National Gambling Amendment Bill, number of bill, B27B 2018, date of deliberations, Tuesday, 19 March 2019, vote of the legislature. The KwaZulu-Natal legislature met today, Tuesday, the 19th March 2019, and agreed to mandate the KwaZulu-Natal delegation to the National Council of Provinces to not to support the National Gambling Amendment Bill B27B 2018, signed by Honorable Speaker Johnson, MPL, 19-3-2019. I thank you.
Thank you very much.
Limpopo,
Honorable
Dihane. Thank you, Chairperson. The Limpopo one. I'm not going to repeat the number of the bill is the same as this one of KZN and Cape and Gauteng. The date of the deliberation was done on the 18th March 2019. And the vote of the legislature is that the province votes in favor of the bill signed by the Honorable Speaker, Paul Ushiel, on the 19th March 2019. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The Mpumalanga mandate, Honorable Mhlanga.
Thank you, Chair. I think I will do the same, not read the number of the bill, but go directly to the mandate. The mandate of the Portfolio Committee on Premier's Office, Finance, Economic Development and Tourism. The committee covers on the permanent delegate presenting the province of Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces a mandate to vote in favor of this bill. Thank you.
Signed by the speaker.
Yeah, signed by the
word. Signed by the speaker, V.S. Sewell. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
On the 19th.
Okay, Northern Cape, Honorable Faber, you
thank
want to help us?
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a mandate from the Deputy Speaker, Honorable J. Birkus, that the legislator votes in favor of the bill.
Thank you very much. The West Kaapse Parlement.
Thank you, voorzitter. Hulle het gepraat oor hierdie aanbeveling wat die regering gemaak en die mandaat wat hy het is not to support the bill. Dat was geteken op die 19e van die 3e maand 2019
behoorlik geonderteken deur die speaker van die Weskaap, Honorable Sharna Fernandes. Dankie, voorzitter.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, what we're sitting with is Gauteng, KZN, Western Cape against. Limpopo Province, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, 4 in favour. Eastern Cape abstaining. Free State, Northwest, late mandates. I've asked the legal advisor to just help us there with what is the rules of the NBOP guide us when we have a situation like this, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Needless to say, I'm not a parliamentary law advisor, as you indicated just a while ago. Advocate Frank Stander, or Jenkins Stander, has been in attendance in this committee. I do not see him this morning, but be that as it may, with your permission, I will try my utmost to make some humble contribution. I'm sitting next to a colleague of mine, Advocate Van der Merwe, who coincidentally is from the Parliamentary Law Advisor's Office, and I've taken the liberty, being in and out of here, to have an informal discussion with her regarding this matter. And before I proceed, Chair, let me be very, very frank. Sometimes it's so difficult to just off the cuff and all of a sudden convey orally an opinion, but given the circumstance, I would do so nonetheless, if the honourable members will bear with me. Chair, allow me to start with by referring to Rule 171 sub 1 of the joint rules pertaining to this honourable committee. And we can all read better than I do, but for the sake of these proceedings, allow me to read it, Chair. The committee to which a bill is referred to must table in the council. And let me jump to B. The bill that has been agreed upon by it, that is clear, if it has been agreed upon, and then or if it has not agreed on a bill, the bill has referred to it to the council. So from my humble reading of this, and also discussed this with my colleagues sitting close to me here, this rule is in that sense mandatory. It leaves no option to this honourable committee than to refer the bill to the council if agreed upon, or if not agreed upon, then refer it in any event in the form that it was referred or had been referred to this honourable committee. The way we read it, we see no discretion to be exercised there. Then we get to the numbers game. I will not repeat what your committee is confronted with. We know the fors, we know the against, and we know the abstention. So the question then arises, where does the numbers come into play? They are not provided for in these rules, or indirectly provided for in these rules. It is in Rule 172 sub 1, Chair, 172 sub 1. Once again, allow me to read. A bill is passed, now the bill is in the council, after having been referred there by this honourable committee, agreed upon or not agreed upon, irrespectively. The bill is now in that forum in the House, and then it says in 172 sub 3, a bill is passed by the council if it is agreed to by the council in terms of section 65(1) of the Constitution. My colleague has been so kind to make it available here, and once again allow me to chair, here it is. It is section 65 sub 1 in the Constitution. Except where the Constitution provides otherwise, which in this instance would not be the case, and then we go to B. All questions before the National Council of Provinces, needless to say that questions would entail a bill as in this case, are agreed when at least 5 provinces vote in that favour. So there is the numbers game in the Constitution. Can we then possibly
try and answer that question in isolation. It seems to be clear, as provided for in the Constitution, that as the mandates are now standing, there is not a clear majority as envisaged in Section 65 of the Constitution. I'm almost done, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity. I don't know whether my colleague would like to assist as well. I'm sure he would give her the opportunity to do so. The question that now arises, what you, Chair, and your Honourable Committee are confronted with is how to deal now with these mandates, because it seems on the reading of the rules that your committee, with respect, is obliged to refer the bill as referred to your Honourable Committee to the Council for the decision-making to be taken there. I thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Very helpful and clear. I'll get to you now, Honourable Ntebe, if you don't mind. Please, Advocate Ntebe.
Thank you, Chair and members. I agree with the interpretation my colleague Advocate strayed on. The one thing that I think that there is another step that this committee could consider. The problem is this committee is running out of time, and that is to say that we still want to see those last two mandates that we have not yet received, because that could change the end result of this vote. So that is another option, but that means that this committee will have to postpone this meeting and will have to reconvene and again vote on that matter. But if the committee, you currently have seven mandates, that is more than enough to proceed. Now, I also need to just, I am a lawyer, so let me put my proviso out there. My mandate as a parliamentary legal advisor is to advise on legal questions. The question before you is a procedural question. My interpretation is that if you have seven votes in front of you, you can finalize this matter. You will not have a vote on, you will not have agreed to a bill, but the rules then, Rule 171.1b, provides that you simply, in your report, say we did not achieve a vote on this bill, whether to reject or to accept it, and therefore, in terms of this rule, we refer it to the House. And then the House will have to vote on it, and the mandating procedures of Parliament and Provincial Legislative Act makes provision for a voting mandate. So there's a third type of mandate that provinces then will have to give, and that voting mandate will then go to the House directly, and the House will then have to see whether it gets 5-4 or 5-against. But that's, like I'm saying, that's my legal interpretation. The NCOP table staff might have a different opinion. I don't even know Lupeka from committee staff. Their mandate is on process and the rules of the House. So there might be a different interpretation from their side. But like I say, from a legal point of view, I think you have two options. Either you postpone and get the last two, or you say we proceed and you refer to the House, and there will have to be voting mandates in the House, and then the House will only be able to proceed on the matter if they have the majority in terms of Section 65 of the Constitution.
Thank you very much. There is a third option that I'll mention after Honourable Ntebe has spoken. Honourable Ntebe.
No, Chair. I want to complicate the lives of the advocate, but I want to ask you as a layman. Somewhere in the rules, I don't know where, and complemented by the Constitution, Section 76 Bill requires a majority of six provinces for it to be able to pass. Is it five or six? No, I want to check whether it's five or six. Because the application on Section 75 is different from 76. On issues that affect provinces, is the majority of provinces, which, in my view, I might be wrong, it should be six.
Chair, with your permission, please clarify that.
Definitely five. I've checked it, and it's in the rules. Do you want to read it for him as an objective person, advocate Strader? He'll believe you more than me.
I can be very, very subjective, to say the least, but I'll be objective in this committee. The numbers we find not in the rules, but in Section 65 of the Constitution, stating clearly that the decision-making in that forum must take place on the basis of a minimum of five votes in favour coming from the provincial cycles.
Mm-hmm. That's clause 65.1 in the Constitution, 65.1b, I think.
No, a veteran here has also assisted me. He's been here too long.
Yeah.
He's even no,
15 years I just gave.
What did you say, six?
No, he said ten.
Sorry? No, Honourable Mtebe, it's six provinces in the case of a constitutional amendment.
I told him.
Okay, so there we have it clear. Okay, it's five provinces for legislation, six for a constitutional amendment. Honourable members, we have the legal advice. There are two options that has been put before us. A third option is that the bill can be withdrawn. Now, I don't know who can withdraw the bill. I assume that it will have to be the minister that withdraws the bill. Advocate Devet wants to help us on that.
Chair, unfortunately, the bill can only be withdrawn up until the second reading. Now, the second reading happened in the National Assembly, so the bill cannot be withdrawn. It will have to be either rejected or passed or amended.
That's very helpful. Very helpful. Okay. You see, I can be wrong. Okay, so that's the two options. Honourable members, whichever way we proceed, the result is going to be resting with the House. Say hypothetically, Eastern Cape votes in favour, sorry, Free State votes in favour, and Northwest votes against. We still have to take it to the House. Even if they both vote in favour, we'll have to take it to the House. If they both vote against, we still have to take it to the House. And then what the advocate has raised there is the voting mandate. Eastern Cape may want to change their mandate either because they're abstaining at the moment. They want to change their mandate either against or in favour. That we leave to the legislature in the Eastern Cape. Am I right that this is not the voting mandate? All right? This is the final mandate, but it's not the voting mandate. Your province can still give you a voting mandate. Yeah, they must abstain in the House. So the permanent delegates must vote in terms of what they have. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. I'll get the chairperson of the House on that day. That's not my responsibility. That's for the chairperson to deal with. I'll give you a report, and in the report, we will indicate that today, these are the mandates that we have received. That has been how the provinces voted. Northern, Northwest, and Free State will tell their delegates how to vote in the House. We're not going to take those mandates and include them in our report. Then it's not the report of this meeting. My problem with postponing it, Advocate DeVet, is that we are meeting next week, Tuesday. I'll speak to that again. But we're presenting these bills to the House next week, Tuesday. All right? If I have it right.
Are we presenting it on Thursday only?
Yes,
oh, because it's the farewell speeches. Then we are going to be very brief in terms of, we don't want to spoil the farewell speeches. Rebecca?
On the report to the House, the rules of the NCOP very clear. Rule 171-2 from 2A and B, which I will read to you. It says, in its report, the committee must state whether it recommends approval of the bill with or without amendment, or rejection of the bill, which has already been, you know, explained. And further on the report, must specify each amendment, if an amended bill was agreed on by it, and each amendment that was considered, and for a reason other than it being out of order, was rejected by it. So there's a report that at least we've prepared that, you know, explain all, you know, the clauses and the reason why they've been rejected, which the committee need to adopt, then at least go for ETC.
Chebeka is very interesting now. You remember earlier on, I was saying that this is not going to be considered by the House because of my miscalculation. Now, if we're presenting it to the House now, with 3-3-1 abstention, I have to read the amendments to the House. But we have the report, yeah. So Rebecca's right. I'll do that.
Okay.
I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, honourable members. This is on the, remember, this is the National Gambling Bill. With the FSB, it was easy because there was only one. On this one, there's quite a number. Right? But it's going to be 80 seats with all these on it. So I don't have to read it all in the House because it will be 80 seats. Whichever way the provinces then gets a mandate to vote on in that meeting. Honourable Faber?
Chairperson, I've only been here 10 years now in the NCFP, and I don't know why all of a sudden my last year in the NCFP, in the 10th year, that I actually get a situation where people don't know how it works. It's very clear. If you have 5 votes or more, the bill will be passed. If it's less than 5 votes, that bill cannot be passed. You cannot go to the NCOP sitting then and get mandates from provinces at that stage where they then want to put in their votes to say, yes, now we vote for it. It cannot work like that. It is the votes that's in front of this committee today, and that should be presented as such.
Honourable Father, there's 2 provinces that has not given a vote in this meeting, and they have the right to vote when we present it to the House. That's the point. Okay? DTI staff, hey, you've been very kind to us, unless you were waiting for the lunch. Thank you very much. I know you're going to report to your superiors the deliberations of today and the outcome. I hope that we've made it clear to you where we stand on this. Honourable members, can I thank you very, very much. You know, when we were dealing with all this legislation, I was saying to myself, we're not going to do justice to you, but we've really done well. Thank you very much, Professor. Then for next week, Tuesday, just to say to you, following up on the copyright bill and the performance of protections amendments bill, there's 4 treaties that we are looking at next week, so that we are also covering ourselves in terms of the international space vis-a-vis the protection of performers as well as copyright.
So please be with us next week. We're presenting it to the select committee next week, Tuesday at 10 o'clock. That's the only item that we have for next week. What we'll do, Honorable Sanga, is that we'll allow members of the select committee to do farewell messages to each other here in the house. We don't know who's coming. In the committee. Because we're not speaking in the house. Tuesday in the committee. Okay. So we leave that for next week. Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you.